This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
It sounds like one of the names they would have for a monarch. It's like Queen Javia the First, Black Radical Queer, Queer Negro Women.
All the way from the A, you listen to my favorite lesbian on BRQ.
Hey, stay locked in with your favorite lesbian on Black Radical Queer. Yeah.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole, aka your favorite lesbian, and you're listening to Black Radical Queer Podcast, our stories on our own terms.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Black Radical Queer Podcast. I am your host, Javia Nicole. Today, I want to focus on another element of prioritizing our well-being. Now, I know at the beginning of the year, I said that for 2019, I was going to focus on ways that we can center ourselves and, you know, really make our, put our wellness front and center, and the reasons why that's important. So I've been periodically, you know, circling back to that over the course of the beginning of the year. In some previous episodes, I talked about self-care. I talked about community care and, like, you know, how we can show up for one another and care for one another. But today what I want to focus on is pleasure and this idea of pleasure as being both a radical and necessary act. So I want to start out by giving a definition. Y'all know how I am. So I tend to kind of do this, but I want to start out by giving a definition of pleasure. And all I did for this definition was literally Google the word pleasure because I wanted to see what a dictionary, you know, definition would say. So pleasure is defined as a feeling of happy satisfaction and enjoyment. So some synonyms for that: delight, joy, glee, gratification, fulfillment, contentment, amusement, enjoyment. So when I'm talking about pleasure, that's what I mean. I do use the words pleasure and joy sometimes interchangeably or in conjunction with one another. So just, you know, to give a heads up about that. But ultimately, you know, I'm going to be talking about pleasure. So first of all, why pleasure? Like, out of all the things, you know, why does pleasure even matter? Well, I really feel like pleasure is our birthright. And it may sound like a weird thing to say, but just bear with me. I feel like pleasure is our birthright because it is something that our ancestors worked for, strived for, and it is something that we deserve. It's not something that should be circumstantial per se, or something that should be optional. That's the better word. It's not something that should be optional. When we look at those of us who are descendants of slaves, despite their circumstances, they were able to find these moments of joy. And whether it was, you know, their interaction with each other, whether it was through music, like through singing and dancing, through their food, through learning, whatever it was, they were able to, despite being under immense oppression, they were able to find these moments of joy. And that was a really radical thing to do because that was not what, you know, when you look at plantation owners and stuff like that, they didn't want slaves to have joy. Like that did not matter to them. So to dare, the fact that they dared to have these moments of joy is a radical act. And so it's our birthright. And so we're in a time now where we may not be going through like chattel slavery, but we are still under immense oppression. And so it is a form of resistance and a radical act for us to seek out and pursue pleasure despite that, because we're in a world that does not want to see us survive, let alone thrive and be well and be and have pleasure in our lives consistently, you know. So it's a revolutionary thing for us to like cultivate our lives in a way where we pursue pleasure and we are deliberate about pleasure. So I think it's really important. I was reading this article by, it was basically kind of like an interview, I guess, by Maggie Lange. I think her last name is pronounced Lange. I might be wrong, y'all, but you know. But she was talking to Adrienne Marie Brown, and Adrienne Marie Brown is the author of a book called Pleasure Activism. I'm all for it. It is amazing, and I agree wholeheartedly, and it's something I have been thinking about. So it was nice to see that it's something that other people are exploring as well, this whole idea of like pleasure as a radical act. So she, Adrienne Marie Brown, she made this statement that just really resonated with me, and that I think is at the core of this whole idea of pleasure being radical. So she said, "It's possible to be both a warrior and a hedonist, that forging more space for your pleasure takes space away from repression and oppression." She put repression slash oppression, and creates a reverberating effect that encourages others to do the same. And that's really at the core of this whole idea that I'm talking about of pleasure as a radical act. So we, you know, are inundated with so many different microaggressions, so many different forms of oppression. And so for us to, despite that, or in the midst of that, carve out space for our pleasure, for us to do the things that we enjoy, is really, it's an amazing thing. And it's something that's necessary for us to do so that we can move beyond survival and shift into a place of thriving. So, and when we do that, we're able to impact others in a positive way as well. So I do definitely agree with her that it's possible for us to do both. It's not necessary, like, you know, I think about the, say, like this idea of like someone like Mother Teresa. Now, Mother Teresa got her issues, of course, but, and you know, I'm not, you know, professing that she's, you know, all great and wonderful or whatever, but I bring up Mother Teresa because, you know, she's looked at as this person who, resigned herself to a life of basically not a lack of indulgence, like not indulging in anything, just, you know, helping people, committing to her faith and all that kind of stuff. And there's this idea that basically, like, we, if we're like going hard, if we're, you know, going hard for whatever we believe in, whatever our cause is, that we can't simultaneously do that and experience pleasure. We can't have a good time. Like, we can't, you can't be, you can't simultaneously be woke or whatever and still listen to the music that you enjoy or whatever. It's like, you know, this, there's these criteria and stuff, whether they're explicit or, you know, more so implied, but there's this criteria for like how to be an activist or how to, you know, properly engage in social justice. But the reality is we're human. We still have regular lives to live. And if we deprive ourselves of everything, then we will be miserable, you know? And so that's why I am someone who I will quickly admit, like, I have certain people who are my quote unquote problematic faves, like in terms of when it comes to art and music and stuff like that. I have some people who are my problematic faves. I know they're problematic, but, you know, I still will like listen to their music or whatever, as long as they don't cross a certain boundary. Like, I, it's still levels to it. I'm not, you know, some stuff is just unacceptable to me. And I mentioned that to you all before, like, say, for instance, like somebody like R. Kelly, no, I'm not gonna listen to his music. Like, I don't need to. I can still, you know, I'm not missing anything out of my life. But if it's somebody who is not on that level of, you know, ridiculousness, and they, you know, still have room to grow and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, I may still listen to them. Or I can acknowledge, you know, kind of where my, where I fall short kind of thing. But there's no way to be a perfect activist or a perfect, you know, social justice warrior or whatever, you know, and we still have to live our day to day lives, and we don't want to live our lives void of pleasure, void of fun. And so that's why I think just like we prioritize whatever, you know, your responsibilities are, whether it's school or work or family, activism, we need to prioritize pleasure in the same way and not have it be an afterthought, not put it on a back burner. So I just think it's something that's really important, you know, that we be mindful of. Okay. So I want to talk about, you know, some different ways that we can deliberately pursue pleasure and also kind of some of the things that come with that as marginalized people, some misconceptions or some assumptions and things like that. So, all right. So, I mean, there are many possibilities for things that we can do that can bring pleasure and joy to our lives, right? And what that looks like is going to be different for every person, of course. We all, we're all not going to like the same things and all that kind of stuff. Also, accessibility matters. And so I want to, just like when I talked about the self-care, like self-care doesn't have to look like, oh, I'm going to the spa. Oh, I'm doing these things that are expensive, you know, because that's not the reality for everybody. Everyone doesn't have access to that. It's the same thing with pleasure. It doesn't have to be, you know, okay, travel brings me pleasure. But, you know, everybody can't afford to just up and go on a trip. Hell, I can't afford to just up and go on a trip, you know, without some kind of planning. So, you know, there are other things that we can do in our regular lives to be able to have these deliberate moments of pleasure in a way that is accessible to us based on where we are. So that can be anything from, you know, us enjoying art, you know, music, books, doing your favorite hobbies, whatever that may be. If you like to dance, making sure that you, you know, dance on a regular basis. If you are a foodie like me, then, you know, trying different foods, trying different drinks, sex, you know, for those who are, because everybody isn't interested in sex. But, you know, that too, of course, is a way to pursue pleasure. And that doesn't automatically, I don't automatically mean you have to be with a partner. Self-love, you know, you can love on yourself just like you can, you know, have sex with somebody else. So that's another way that you can pursue pleasure. And also intimacy, and not, you know, so outside of sex, but just like having intimacy with someone that you care about, whether it's just like spending quality time, being affectionate, whatever that may look like for you, or, you know, spending time with your community. You're doing enjoyable things with family and friends, doing enjoyable things with folks that you share, you know, commonalities with, whatever it may be. There are so many different ways that we can access pleasure, and we can access it based on what works for our individual situations. Of course, for some folks it's easier than others. We all have different circumstances, so I want to remain mindful of that, but it's still something that we should think about, you know, making a regular integral part of our lives based on what will work for us. But I want to also mention that I'm aware that there are so many things that impact this, and there are also a lot of assumptions and misconceptions when it comes to pleasure and marginalized people, especially those folks who are, you know, even more marginalized. So, for instance, with, let's say, disabled folks or people who are neurodivergent or folks who are poor or folks who are fat or who have different types of bodies, you know, not like what's considered conventionally attractive, all those kinds of things. It's a radical act for, you know, these kind of subgroups of a subgroup to pursue pleasure as well. And because in a lot of ways, people don't think that they're either deserving of pleasure or have access to pleasure or, you know, can have pleasure in certain ways. So when you look at, for instance, someone who's disabled, people can look at disabled people as if they are void of sexuality. They look at disabled people and they just kind of like make everything revolve around their disability. But the reality is disabled people can experience a range of pleasure just like anyone else, whether that be sexually or it be creatively, artistically, in community, with whatever, you know, it's that range is still accessible. And it's not, you know, shouldn't be looked at as, oh, well, this person is, you know, in a wheelchair, so intimacy or sex or whatever isn't one of the ways that they experience pleasure. But that's a very, it's a ridiculous assumption to make, honestly. Having a disability or being neurodivergent or being plus size or whatever does not make you any less desiring of pleasure than anybody else, and it doesn't make you any less worthy. So as we're looking at ways to deliberately pursue pleasure, we want to be mindful of any misconceptions or biases that we're entering into it with, especially when we think about engaging with other people and we doing this in a very deliberate way. So if you're like, you know, one of the things that you want to do is engage in a favorite hobby of yours. Let's say that you want to dance. You know, you love to dance. You want to go dancing. Understanding that, you know, you can do that with, you can do that by yourself, or you can do that with someone who you may not have expected to necessarily want to do that type of activity. So I was looking at this video and it's like a dancer, she's in a wheelchair, and she's a professional dancer or whatever. And she's bomb. And so, you know, if she went based off of what people assumed she could and couldn't do and thought she could and couldn't do, she would not have pursued that as something that really brings a lot of joy into her life. And so that's something that we want to be mindful of. Like, for one, we don't want to hinder ourselves with our thought process, and we don't want to hinder other people with our thought processes in regards to what can and cannot be done in this pursuit of pleasure and joy. So it's just something for us to keep in mind. There's a other like section or quote in the interview with Adrienne Marie Brown that also stood out to me. And I mean, it really resonated with me because I'm like, yeah, I feel this way. absolutely. So she said, "I don't avoid the activist guilt that's tied to devoting yourself to justice, but I certainly examine it. I believe it's tied to the truth that as an individual, I can never do enough in the face of all the intersecting injustices of my life and time. But I sometimes look at how far I've come and how far I've come in my lifetime, in my lineage, how much repression I have cast off, how much oppression I have negated, how I went from homophobic to pansexual, from military brat to post-nationalist / post-capitalist. I feel free a lot. I surround myself with good revolutionary people. And I think, okay, you know, this may be an insignificant life in some grand epic scape, but in the scale of my life, I am doing my best." And there's more that she says, but that particular part, it really resonated with me, because there was a point in time where I did feel guilt about enjoying things. Like, I would, you know, enjoy something, and then it would be kind of like, in the back of my mind, I would think about, oh, but I have this other stuff to do, or, oh, but these people, you know, aren't able to enjoy this, whatever. Just all this guilt that would well up just from me pursuing things that brought me joy, right? And so I think that, you know, like she mentioned that, you know, it's something that she examines. I had to examine it and understand, why am I feeling this way? You know, we have to understand that we are worthy and deserving of being happy and of having joy and having pleasure in our lives. And, you know, it can be an overwhelming feeling. I think what really resonated with me and stood out to me was when she said, "I can never do enough in the face of all the intersecting injustices of my life and time. But I sometimes look at how far I've come in my lifetime, in my lineage, how much repression I have cast off, how much oppression I have negated." And, you know, it can be overwhelming sometimes when you look at all of the things that we go through, all of the oppression that we face, all of the microaggressions that we deal with on a regular basis, the many ways that we are marginalized. When you look at those things, it can be very difficult to kind of like take it all in and see outside of it, you know. It's a very overwhelming thing, at least for me personally. When I think about it sometimes, it's just like overwhelming, almost debilitating. Like, it's crazy because it's so, I just look at, oh my gosh, like I have all these different things and I know all these different people that are marginalized, and wanting to be able to do something about it and knowing that a lot of things are out of my control. Like, there's only so much I can do. And that's something that really has to be reconciled. And that's something that I constantly work to reconcile for myself. Because I want to be able to, you know, help people, and I want us to be free. Ultimately, I want us to be free from the weight and the burden and the hindrance of oppression. And so sometimes I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, I did these things to try to help, but, you know, I look at the magnitude of it, you know, but I have to keep in mind that we have to keep in mind that this is something that is systemic. It's systemic oppression that has been ingrained for a generation. So it's something that goes beyond our individual lifetimes. And just because there's only so much can do, that doesn't make what we do any less significant. And so there's that. And we have to look at the work we do individually and internally, and not look at that as less than, not take it lightly or anything like that. Because I know personally, I've done a lot of unpacking. I've done a lot of learning and growing over the years. And we have a tendency to minimize the work that we've done. Like, we've put more value on what we do for other people than what we do for ourselves. And it is necessary, you know, to have that, to be able to have some type of perspective, you know what I mean? Not be self-absorbed. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to help other people, but we should not relegate ourselves to some kind of like lower status. You know, it's a beneficial thing to help ourselves as well. And so when we look at the work that we do on ourselves, whether it's us learning about people that are different from us so that we can grow, you know, us challenging our misconceptions or our assumptions, our upbringing, our spirituality, really interrogating what we know to be true, to test it, to find out, is this shit really true? I could have believed this my whole life, but is it really true? Yeah, I know I was taught this, but is it really true? You know, so doing the very hard work, the mental, emotional, spiritual, and sometimes physical labor of that work to unpack things and to like grow ourselves is something that is meaningful and something that is significant. And when we look at kind of like the state of the world and everything that's going on, we lose sight of the work we've done on ourselves and how impactful and powerful that is, and how it is something to be celebrated, and it is something that we should like give ourselves some props for. You know, of course, I'm not saying that, oh, we get props for doing shit that we're supposed to do as just, you know, being adults or something like that. Like, yeah, I got to clean up. Yeah, I got, you know, we got our regular responsibilities, but daring to challenge, you know, beliefs that you've held for years and years is something that I don't think should be taken lightly. You know, we can really celebrate our growth and acknowledge, at least acknowledge, you know, our growth or whatever. I think that's something that's really important. So if we reframe it, you know, and we look at that a little bit more, instead of only looking at, hey, this is everything that's wrong in the world and I'm trying to do my part, but there's just so much that's wrong and it's so overwhelming. Absolutely true. But if we balance that out with, okay, I'm doing a lot of this work on myself, I'm making sure that I am contributing to be a part of the solution, as well as unpacking whatever the fuck I need to unpack and trying to be a better person. Looking at that and taking that into consideration, I think helps us to put some things in perspective so that we can pursue this idea of pleasure. We can pursue joy without feeling guilty. We can go on that trip we want to go on without feeling like we don't deserve it. We can have that, you know, try out that restaurant we want to try out without, you know, talking ourselves out of it because of whatever else is going on. We can pursue those things that really make us happy. We can have sex with whoever we want to have sex with, you know, without guilt tripping ourselves or feeling some kind of way or feeling shame, you know, anything like that too, because that's the other piece of this idea of deliberately pursuing pleasure is that we have a lot of shame that we have to unpack around the guilt and around the idea of us experiencing pleasure. So many of us feel shame when in regards to like our sexuality, ourselves as sexual beings, having sex, having the kind of sex that we want to have, or even with just the activities that we want to do. Like for me, I used to dance, but I my introduction to dance was in college, really. I never really danced before that. I felt very self-conscious about my body, and I felt a lot of shame around my body. And I felt a lot of, I had a bunch of issues, and I won't get into all that, but dancing was something I never thought I would do. And it's something I actually did once I got in college. And I had to unpack like even misconceptions or assumptions that I made about myself in order to pursue that. I assumed that I wouldn't be able to move a certain way. I wouldn't be as flexible as the other folks in the class. I would be the biggest person in the class. Folks would look at me like I had all this shit going on in my head, all these assumptions and all the shame and these misconceptions. And I had to really unpack that stuff so that I could deliberately pursue this thing that intrigued me and that brought a lot of joy to my life. And I don't like belly dance anymore. But for the 7 years that I did it, you know, for a big chunk of that time, it did bring joy to my life, and it did really help impact how I view myself. Right. So sometimes we have to interrogate, you know, those assumptions and those beliefs that we have so that we can make room to experience pleasure in different ways and experience joy in different ways and not feel any shame or guilt or feel like we're undeserving or unworthy or feel like it's frivolous, because that's the other thing too. So, you know, I bring up this whole idea of us centering ourselves and our pleasure being a way to do that, because sometimes we look at it as a frivolous thing. We look at it as not being important. So that's why it gets put on the back burner. And that's why I am specifically saying that it's something we need to deliberately pursue, as opposed to it just being a byproduct or an afterthought or just kind of, you know, just happening just because. It's something we deserve to be deliberate about. We deserve to deliberately engage in the things that make us happy. We deserve to deliberately engage with the people that make us happy. And so I think that it's a very powerful way for us to center ourselves, you know? And it's something that's pretty simple, but sometimes the simple things can be the most difficult. But I want I bring this up because I want for you all to just think about it and to, you know, really keep in mind that anytime that you have pleasure, you experience joy or anything like that, that it's a form of resistance. Every time you laugh, it's a form of resistance, because when you're in the midst of systemic oppression, of course, your oppressor doesn't want to see you laugh, smile, happy, joyous, pleasured, none of those things. Like, they don't give a fuck. They don't care about that. They don't care about, you know, about us really being able to live our lives in a way where we can thrive. So it's like, if we really want to, quote unquote, live our best lives, then pleasure is an imperative part of that, whatever that looks like. You know, I didn't want to reduce pleasure to just sex, because although sex is definitely a way to experience pleasure, okay, I ain't mad. However, that is not the way that everyone pursues pleasure. Asexual people exist. So it's not the end all be all in terms of pleasure. We can experience pleasure in so many ways. And what I really challenge you to do is to figure out what brings you pleasure, what brings you joy, what are those things that make you happy, make you smile, make you laugh. And once you pinpoint that, figure out how can you have that in your life more regularly. Is it something that you're only having every now and then? If you realize, you know what, I like, you know, having dinner parties with my friends, like that is something I really love, I enjoy, or whatever. And if you're like, okay, I love having dinner parties, but I realized, damn, I haven't had a dinner party in almost a year. So looking at that and saying, okay, well, let me make this a more regular part of my life because it's something that really makes me happy. And us being deliberate about it and prioritizing it. Put your shit on the calendar. You know, if you want to dance, put that dance class on the calendar or just dance in your damn house. That's the thing. Everything doesn't require us spending money or going out of our, you know, our comfortable space or whatever. If you want to just dance around your bedroom, dance around your bedroom. But make a plan, you know, for yourself. Make a date with yourself and be like, you know what? Thursday after work, I'm going to cut on my favorite music. I'm about to, you know, take over for the 99 and 2000 and just dance my ass off. If that's what makes you happy, do it and don't feel like it's something that is insignificant or frivolous, you know, like, oh, well, I don't need to be doing this. There's so many other things I could be doing. I need to be productive. And I used to be stuck in that. Like, that was definitely my thought process. Like, oh, I don't need to do this. I need to take care of this other thing. And sometimes we do have to prioritize our necessities. I mean, this is real life, you know, but we don't want to neglect our pleasure in the midst of that. We want to be able to do both, and we can do both. So I may not be able to take the trip I want to take. I love to travel. Travel brings me pleasure, but I got bills. I can't travel as much as I would like. So, you know, what that may look like is maybe doing a staycation, or, you know, that may look like me doing something else, listening to my favorite music, you know, laughing with my wife, whatever, doing something else that's going to bring me pleasure. Because I can't take the trip right now, but I can do it later. So we got to look at kind of like on a small scale and on a larger scale, what are the things that bring you pleasure? What are kind of like the everyday things that bring you pleasure? If it's like, oh, well, I just love to laugh, I love having good conversation, then making plans to be like, okay, you know what? Me and this friend always have, you know, we always have the best conversations. Let me make it a point to talk to them a little bit more regularly. Like, we only talk every now and then, you know, once every blue moon. So let's say, let's talk once every couple weeks or even once a month or something. Let me have a, you know, something kind of set with them where we deliberately, you know, have this intimacy and this laughter and this connection with each other on a regular basis. I think it's so, so important. So yeah, hopefully, I wasn't rambling or anything. I really wanted to continue to talk about different ways that we can prioritize ourselves, center ourselves, and really strive for this idea of being well, you know, strive for wellness. And I think that our, of course, like I mentioned, our self-care, our community care and all that matters, but our pleasure is so important in that. It's so important that we make it a habit to be very intentional about going after those things that bring that light to our lives and, things that bring joy. I call it, a lot of times I say bright spots or whatever, but whatever it is that makes you happy and that, you know, brings you that fulfillment, that satisfaction, pursuing it unapologetically, you know, as long as you ain't hurting nobody, you know, unless you're doing some consensual kinky stuff. I mean, hey, that's your business, but you know, us doing those things that, you know, bring us pleasure. And it, those things do tie into what I've mentioned previously about self-care and community care. It ties into self-care because you pursuing your pleasure is a way that you are, caring for yourself, you know, however you choose to do that. It is a way that you're caring for yourself. And it, ties into community care because if we are deliberate and intentional about the way that we engage with each other, it's something that can be a pleasurable experience. And we can get a lot of pleasure, in our community spaces if we structure them as such, you know, if we make them spaces where we can commune for like intimacy, whether that be like emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy, whatever, where we do that and we don't just work. Because a lot of times that's what we do. If we make time and space for us to relax and enjoy whatever it is, like let's, you know, make pleasure like a, something that's mandatory and not optional. That's my point. I think that we, the way that we go about our lives, we look at pleasure as something that is optional, kind of like, I'll get around to it when I get around to it. you know, or I'm going to do this thing. And if I happen to, you know, if it just so happens to happen, then cool. But we cannot thrive like that. We cannot thrive living a life where pleasure is an optional thing. It got to be mandatory. And understanding that by making it mandatory, that in and of itself is radical as fuck. It is so radical for you to say, in the midst of a society that oppresses you, in the midst of being marginalized, that you're like, you know what? I'm subjected to all these things, and yet I still dare to pursue pleasure. I still dare to enjoy myself. I still dare to have these bright spots. I still dare to have joy. It's a radical act. You know, our very existence is radical, y'all. So that means that the things that we do by virtue of our radical ass existence, the things that we do are radical. Anything that we do that goes against what we've been told we can and should do is a radical act. And that's pretty much most things, because only thing, basically, we've been told that we're just good for working, basically being laborers. So if we dare to do anything outside of that, it's a radical act. If we dare to work for ourselves, if we dare to, or do some kind of work that we actually enjoy, if we dare to, you know, do anything that's not just slaving for the man, basically, then it's a radical act, right? So, like I've said before, doesn't necessarily mean you have to be on the front lines, literally in the streets, holding signs and stuff like that. That is valuable. But I recognize that that's not something that's accessible to everybody. But still, you're still being radical in your own way. You living your black ass, queer ass, radical ass life. You're being radical. You're challenging the status quo. And so pursuing pleasure and being deliberate and intentional about your pleasure is just another way to do that. And it can really help enrich your life. At least I believe so. I think that it'll help bring some balance. You know, we work a lot. We deal with a lot of heavy stuff. And so being able to also have some heavy pleasure to come up in the mix and help to even the scales a little bit, at least get them a little bit closer to even. You know, of course, we deal with so much stuff, it's hard to completely balance it out. But, you know, something is better than nothing. And getting closer to that place of balance is certainly better than, you know, just continuing to live in a way that is completely void of pleasure. So, yeah. All right, y'all. I think I have talked long enough. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of BRQ. I really appreciate you. You know, I have been receiving some awesome messages from y'all, and, you know, I really appreciate it. I can't thank you enough. I can't, you know, tell you how much I appreciate it. And, it just really means a lot to me. Another thing I wanted to mention is that I was recently interviewed for Voyage LA Magazine, and I'm talking about the podcast. And the reason that I thank you all like every episode is because you all listening is what marks success for me. And they asked me in the interview, like, what's my marker of success? And I'm just like, each and every person that listens, like each one of you that decides to listen to my voice, you know, every week or whatever, is a marker of success to me. Every person that sends me a message, pouring their heart out and just sharing themselves with me, people who agree to be on the show and share themselves with me, that means a lot to me. You know, that's a marker of success to me. And that brings me joy. It brings me pleasure. It is a pleasure to do this for you all, to do this with you all. It is a pleasure to get to know you better and to share myself with you, and have you share yourself with me. So thank you for being a part of this, and for making it possible for me to continue doing this. It's been almost a year. I cannot believe it. Time has flown by, but it's been almost a year since we've been doing this thing, and since y'all been coming through and listening to me every week, and I've been rambling and talking to y'all. So, you know, thanks for tuning in to my country self. I can never thank you enough. All right. So that's it for now. Be on the lookout for the next episode. And that's it. I don't think I have anything else to say. Surprisingly, I know I can talk, but I think that's it. Get some pleasure in your life. You know, pursue some pleasure. It's important. You deserve. You are worthy. You are deserving. Go do what pleases you. Whatever you like. All right, y'all. Until next time, I am out. Bye, y'all.
Black Radical Queer Podcast is all about intersectionality and Black queer folks sharing our stories on our own terms. We navigate an array of identities, and BRQ is an outlet where we can see the spectrum of those identities reflected, explored, and celebrated. Black Radical Queer is a Main Hustle Media podcast hosted by Javia Nicole, produced and edited by Charmaine Johnson. Music is by Publicity. You can find us on social media by looking up Black Rad Queer. It's BLKRADQWR. We are on Facebook as well as Instagram and Twitter. Same handle regardless, at Black Rad Queer. BLKRADQWR. We also have a Facebook discussion group that's just called BRQ Discussion Group. And you can also listen wherever you get your podcasts. So we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Google Play, you know, all those types of things. And we have, you know, our home base that's on Libsyn. So you can listen on there as well. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Make sure you come on back around next week to see what we have for you. And all right, y'all, I'm out.
Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.